Hello, my name is Tracy Sinclair of Discover Your Potential, and I would like to welcome you to this AAT podcast on work and project planning. The objectives of this podcast are for you to be able to 1. Explain and apply the project and workload management life cycle, 2. Define a project or task and set appropriate objectives, 3. Plan project or work activities through work breakdown structures, 4. Apply techniques to help prioritise workload on a regular basis and ensure completion of all actions, and 5. Review project or task and evaluate your performance. Outline. During the course of this recording, we will cover the following areas: the project and workload management life cycle, the three guiding principles, the importance of setting good objectives, work breakdown structures, project and work plans, key considerations for ensuring a robust and workable plan, techniques for assessing priority and risk, time and workload management techniques, and project or task completion, close down, and review. It is important to note at this point that the tools and techniques suggested hereafter are to be considered within the context of the size, scope, and nature of your project. So, for relatively straightforward or small projects, you may choose to spend much less time on each stage or technique than if you are working on a highly complex or large project. The amount of time, therefore, that you spend on each element is based on your own judgment of what is appropriate for your particular project. Work or project characteristics. Let us start by looking at the bigger picture. Control of a package of work or project starts right at the beginning. Many projects fail before they have even started because the foundations for success were not in place. It is necessary, therefore, to recognise that projects, both large and small, typically display certain characteristics that need to be both present and well managed if the project is to be a success. So let us consider, what are the characteristics of a project? I'm going to talk briefly about 10 important points. 1. A clearly defined aim. The overall purpose of the project needs to be stated. A vision of what successful implementation would be like should be explored and can be positioned in terms of problems that would be resolved, costs or time that would be saved, profit that would be gained, customer or employee satisfaction that would result. 2. Clearly defined deliverables and objectives. The specific outcomes and success criteria that would determine that the project aim has been achieved should be identified. 3. Clearly defined constraints and limitations. The deliverables of any project will need to be achieved within certain constraints and limitations. Some limitations may refer to cost, time, and/or quality issues. Others may define certain specific features intrinsic in the project's concept and overall aim. 4. A client and/or a sponsor. The person that the project is delivering to should be clearly identified, i.e. the customer. This person may be either internal or external to the organisation. In addition, a project sponsor should also be identified, which may be the same person as the client, if appropriate. The sponsor is likely to be someone internal to the organisation who is in a position of authority and seniority. They will have the power to commit the necessary resources to support the project, as well as help to clear potential barriers and resistance to the project's activity. It is essential that both of these functions are not simply defined, but strongly and visibly supported. There is a need for the project manager to establish a good relationship with both of these people, with the boundaries of each other's role clearly understood so that the project can enjoy a strong and cohesive management team. 5. Specific start and end points. A project should be a defined package of work that is completed within a specific time frame. 6. Sequenced phases and stages of activity. Within the overall time frame, the project activity needs to be scheduled and planned in logical stages in order to lead towards successful implementation of all deliverables. 7. Use of varied people resources who need to work effectively together. All projects make use of a team of sorts. This may well involve a number of people who are not necessarily accustomed to working with each other, or may in fact not even know each other at all. Therefore, building an effective team swiftly is an essential part of the project manager's role. 8. A project involves non-routine activities and responsibilities. Projects are quite often one-offs. However, even if they do have aspects that have been done before, they will still imply non-routine activity and change in some way. 9. A project implies a certain amount of uncertainty and risk. The fact that projects involve an element, either large or small, of change means that to a certain extent we will be entering the unknown. This in turn implies an element of risk. It is the role of the project manager to try to reduce the unknown and thereby the risk. However, it is also important to understand that uncertainty and risk might not be eradicated completely, and it is therefore also the role of the project manager to manage the uncertainty and risk and maintain it at an appropriate level. 10. It needs to be carefully defined, planned, and managed throughout. Due to the uncertain and perhaps risky nature of projects, it is critical that the project manager ensures that it has the best possible chance of success. This comes from clear definition, thorough planning, and close management at all times. We will discuss some of the previous points in more detail as this recording progresses. But for now, I would like to share with you the 7 stages of the project life cycle. Stage 1 is to define your project, and the points just discussed about characteristics very much help to begin this stage. It is during this stage that we are concerned with gaining a clear understanding of the what and the why of the project. We then move on to plan, which is about getting into more detail, establishing the how and the when of the project. Next comes the resourcing stage, which is when we need to consider who will be needed and also the what in terms of other resources like materials or perhaps equipment and money, etc. Once these 3 stages are complete, we move on to stage 4, which is to implement the project. This stage may last 6 weeks or 6 months, depending upon how big the piece of work is. Once implementation is finished, we begin stage 5, which is to either hand over or close down the project. Stage 6 is to review how the project went and how successful it was. Stage 7 is monitoring and controlling, although it is not really a stage at all, because it is an activity that is initiated right at the very beginning and runs throughout the life cycle of the project. So, having set the scene, let us take a closer look at the definition stage and some of the techniques which can help us to do this effectively. The 3 guiding principles. Imagine a triangle with the words cost, time, and quality at each corner. The original parameters for cost, time, and quality should be clearly defined at the beginning of the project. Input from your manager, the sponsor, or the client may also be necessary in order to gain clear expectations. Time and cost expectations generally tend to be relatively straightforward in establishing. However, establishing the quality requirements can be a little trickier. Remember, quality is a subjective thing. I often say that quality is in the eye of the beholder. So who beholds the quality of your project? Who will be determining what a quality job is at the end of the day? It is therefore very important to secure their input at this stage. Also, we sometimes seem to think that quality means the best, which is not always what is required. There is a saying, fitness for purpose, and it is important that you clearly understand the level of quality that is expected, wanted or needed for your project to be deemed a success. It may not be possible to constantly satisfy the criteria for all three during project implementation. Therefore, the triangle can be used to support effective decision-making when compromises need to be made. If a problem occurs, which one or two of the three criteria are most important? For example, if something you expected to be finished by the end of the week is now delayed for some reason, what do you do? Do you protect your original time frame and compromise cost by putting more resources onto the task? Do you protect your original time frame and maintain the current budget by accepting a slight drop in the quality of the output? Or do you compromise the time frame because the cost and quality are more important and therefore accept the delay and readjust your schedule? This process is what is known as understanding and managing the key drivers of the project. And getting it right makes for very effective project management. Now let us consider how feasible your project actually is, given the constraints associated with the time, cost, and quality criteria. At times, the initial seed of thought for a project might be quite vague. It may also be an idea for which the originator feels an understandable amount of energy and bias. Both of these factors need to be considered when initiating a feasibility study. Projects have a way of consuming considerable amounts of time, money, and effort. Therefore, in order for the feasibility of the idea to be effectively assessed, certain key pieces of information need to be drawn from the original concept or idea. This may sound like common sense, and in fact it is. However, it has been known on too many occasions in some organisations that projects are instigated simply because someone thought it would be a good idea. As a bare minimum, we should be looking to establish the following information. Why? What is the purpose of implementing the idea? What problem will it solve? What business advantage will it achieve? How will it support the organisation's goals? What value add will it give rise to? Etc. etc. Vision. What does success look like? What features and characteristics would successful implementation of the idea result in? Success constraints and criteria. What specific criteria need to be in place in order to demonstrate successful implementation? Within what constraints and limitations must the project be achieved? Remember here the three guiding principles of cost, time, and quality. Remember golden rule number one. Project managers don't make assumptions. Never assume that you have been given all of the necessary information to conduct the feasibility study. There may be a need to challenge the concept and probe a little in order to establish sufficient details and parameters within which to proceed. Having completed this groundwork, we can now move on to setting objectives for our project or work package. An objective is defined as a precise statement of what is to be achieved within a certain time frame. Usually in addition to normal day-to-day activities, for example, a particular project, report, or other package of work. It is like the beam of a torch on a dark night. It shows the way ahead. It should be specific in terms of what you want done and when you want it done, so that you can decide at a later date whether or not it has been achieved. The benefits of setting performance objectives are that they help a person to perform well in their job, enable a person to contribute more effectively to business objectives, assist in developing a person's potential, promote continuous improvement, provide a set of goals in a complex work environment, motivate people by having a clear sense of purpose, give direction and consistency, provide a basis for planning, and provide a base for meaningful performance feedback. Ideally, they should start with the chief executive, who sets objectives for each director. These then cascade through the organisation to ensure that everyone is working towards achieving the overall business objectives. Individual and project objectives will vary in range and scope. Some will cover the daily responsibilities of the job and other duties that keep the work flowing properly at acceptable levels of quality. Others will relate to specific projects or initiatives that a person may be involved with. Writing SMART objectives. It is best to stick to approximately 4 to 6 main project objectives. Once you have identified these, you will need to break them down into workable sub-objectives. Some people prefer to call these targets or goals. Whatever you call them, they must be clear-cut and not simply vague statements of intent. The best way to do this is to ensure that they are what we call SMART. S is for specific. The objective should be specific and clear enough so that anyone involved can understand it, know what is meant by it, and exactly what it is that will need to be accomplished. If in doing this the objective appears to be overloaded with detail, then there may in fact be more than one objective contained within. In this case, they should be split out. Or perhaps the objective is referring to sub-activities or criteria, in which case they should be referenced in an appendix to the objective. M is for measurable. Include a performance standard. When objectives are measurable, it is easier to agree later on what has been achieved. The objective needs to be measurable in order for its progress to be monitored during implementation and to demonstrate its ultimate delivery. Measures will usually hinge around the criteria of cost, time, quality, and/or quantity. A is for achievable. The individual must have the necessary skills or knowledge to achieve the objective, or be able to acquire them quickly. A can also be for agreed or accepted. In order for it to be a success, the objective needs to be agreed by all relevant parties. It is preferable that it is also accepted if true support and buy-in are to be achieved. This highlights the difference between commitment and compliance. R is for realistic. The objectives must be realistic. Are the ability, the time and resources available to achieve them? Another option is whether the objective is clearly relevant to the overall aim of the department, team or project. T is for time-bound. Include target dates in your objectives. Specify when the results must be achieved, and don't leave an objective open-ended. Also remember to consider and build in the three components of 1. Action. What is the person actually going to do? 2. Standard. What level of performance is expected or required? And 3. Condition. Under what conditions, in what circumstances, will the task be achieved? An example of a project objective could therefore be to prepare and submit a job description blueprint for the new appraisal system for approval by the HR director by the end of January. This now completes our section on project and work package definition as we move on to look closer at project planning. Whilst we should now have clearly defined project objectives or deliverables, they may still be rather high level and will almost certainly involve a range of different tasks and activities that will need to be completed. As part of the planning process, we need to break down the objectives into more specific and manageable work packages. In this way, we can more easily establish how long the work will take, the relationship each package has with the others, and the amount and type of resource required to undertake it. All of this information is necessary for putting the overall project plan together. A work breakdown structure is a simple yet useful tool that is typically used to identify these work packages. The work breakdown structure is often most effective when undertaken as a group activity. It is therefore important to consider who would be the most appropriate contributors to such an exercise in terms of knowledge and experience, etc. As a group activity, it is also a good way of promoting understanding of and commitment to the project, and so is an excellent technique to use with project stakeholders and team members, etc. Essentially, a brainstorm is conducted in order to identify all of the various tasks that will need to be completed in order to achieve each project objective. On a practical note, this is usually most effectively done by writing each project objective on a separate post-it note and sticking them up onto a wall or whiteboard, etc. Each brainstormed task is also captured on a post-it note and is then clustered around the relevant objective to begin to form the structure. The level of detail that you take the structure down to should be dependent upon the complexity of the task and everyone's comfort level with regards to understanding what the task involves. As a result, some work packages may be broken down further than others. To help establish the right level of detail, you may want to consider that the work breakdown structure should enable you to coordinate the different activities, measure what is going on in terms of quality, quantity, cost or time so that you can monitor progress, and it should also enable you to establish and assign responsibility for each package or individual work item. The overall objective of the work breakdown structure is to establish a complete shopping list of work, ensuring that nothing has been forgotten. Once we have a complete list, we can then begin the sequencing activities as we move into more detailed planning. Is your plan robust? Most plans look good on paper, and many of them fall at the first hurdle because they have not taken into account some of the day-to-day issues associated with the working environment. Here are a few areas to consider. Expertise. Think carefully about the level of expertise required for each task. Also consider the impact on how long a task will take to complete given the expertise or experience of the person undertaking it. Holidays. What arrangements are to be made regarding project members booking and taking annual leave during the period in which your project is to be implemented? What is your level of authority over those arrangements? And what notice period is required? Remember, golden rule number 2, project managers don't like surprises. Therefore, the more information you have about what is going to happen in the future, the better. That way, you can plan for it and make your project work within the daily environment. Sickness. Does your project fall at a time when people typically have more sick leave? How might sickness impact your project and what can you do about that? Motivation. At which points in the project may you need to have more focus on team building and motivation? Communication. One of the biggest criticisms of project managers is that they don't keep people sufficiently informed. Have you considered a communications plan or update report? Does your communication plan need to be modified in light of the critical tasks and phases in the project? Seasonal considerations. Does your project fall at a point in the year that could impact its progress or success? For example, Christmas or the summer holiday period, etc. Multicultural considerations. For multicultural or multinational projects, think about international bank holidays and other seasonal or cultural issues which may need to be factored into your working practices. Organisational considerations. Are there any organisational changes that could affect your project? What is the current environment like? Remember that when it comes to salary review time, people are going to be more concerned with their pay rise than with your project. The last thing we need to do before preparing the final plan and documenting it is to undertake a risk assessment exercise. A project plan might look good on paper. However, we must ensure that we have given due consideration to the risks that might be associated with its implementation. Here is a very popular and simple technique. Step 1. Brainstorm all of the possible risks associated with your project. An effective way of doing this is to focus the brainstorm around cost, time, quality criteria. For example, what are all the things that could happen that would jeopardise our ability to stay in budget? What are all the things that could happen that would lead us to missing the deadline? What are all the things that could happen that would jeopardise our ability to meet our given quality criteria? Knowing and focusing on the key drivers of your project is obviously very helpful here, as it gives you a level of priority when assessing the risks and what to do about them. Step 2. Take each risk and list them in a table, and then consider one at a time and agree how likely it is to occur. Give that likelihood a score out of 10, 10 being high, and note it on the table. Step 3. Add another column to your table, and now take each risk at a time and consider the level of impact it would have on your project if it did occur. Give that impact score out of 10, 10 being high, and note it on the table. Step 4. Now plot the risks on a chart, with one axis being likelihood and the other being impact. Divide the chart into four quadrants by drawing horizontal and vertical lines at the point where a score of 5 sits. Step 5. Any risks falling in the top right-hand box are obviously a priority to look at, and perhaps consider some appropriate action, either to reduce the likelihood of it happening or reduce the impact it has if it does occur. The risk chart can be converted into a prioritised action table. The table should be reviewed regularly to ensure that it is up to date and reflects the current situation. Now that you have a complete list of tasks which you have assessed against the various elements of your daily working environment and the risks that you foresee may influence your project, you are now ready to document your plan. The most straightforward way to do this is to draw up a time plan. Simply draw up a table listing the project activities, objectives, sub-objectives and tasks down the first column. Subsequent columns show time passing in either days, weeks or months, etc., depending upon the level of detail you wish to see of the total duration of your project. You can then shade in the duration of each task. Some tasks can be implemented concurrently, and others will have relationships or dependencies with others. You can show these dependencies by drawing lines to show that they are connected. Once you have accurately plotted each task based on its individual duration and its dependencies, you will clearly see how long the whole project will take to complete. You can also note on each task the initials of the person doing the task, or alternatively create a separate column to show names, etc. You can also shade tasks in a different colour to show that they are complete, and also if they are overdue, so that this can be clearly seen and addressed. Project plans can be documented in Word tables, Excel spreadsheets, or on wall planners, for example. The best thing is to make it as straightforward as possible and as easy to update as possible. Remember, your original project plan is in a way already out of date once the actual implementation of tasks begins. Unless, of course, every single task is completed exactly as was planned, which, by the way, is what in project management language we would call a miracle. So, keep a record of the original plan and then begin to update it on a regular basis to show the true and current picture. At the end of the project, having a before and after version of your plan is a great vehicle to undertake your project review and lessons learnt exercise so that you can improve and do even better next time. We have one more area to look at before moving on to implement our project plan, and that is to consider the resources required to make it happen. Some of the issues associated with resource allocation will have become apparent during the planning process. However, in order to ensure that you have the right resource when you need it, you should consider the following points. Think carefully about the nature and level of expertise required. A mismatch of expertise to the job could have significant impact on the task duration estimates that you have prepared, not to mention the quality. Prepare clear role specifications that are understood and agreed. Ensure that the expertise you require is available when you need it. Discuss and agree certain points with the individual's workplace line manager to confirm arrangements regarding areas such as taking annual leave, performance review and feedback, reward and recognition, and availability criteria, etc. Establish any contractual criteria regarding external or subcontracted resource and ensure that the appropriate terms and conditions are secured and managed. Also think about other types of resource that you may require, for example equipment and materials, and prepare clear specifications with associated timescales and costs. Look at how your resource is allocated through the project's life cycle and identify in advance if there are any areas of over-allocation. Plan in advance how to resolve these issues and take preventative measures rather than wait for the crisis to happen. You may have a number of different options to resolve resource conflicts. In each case, remember to conduct some scenario planning and assess each one against your plan to confirm that it is feasible. Also review each option in light of the cost, time, quality triangle, the three guiding principles, to help you come to the most appropriate solution to the problem. Finally, remember that this, like all of the project control techniques, is not a one-off exercise and should form part of your regular project monitoring activities. Full versus part-time project teams. You may or may not have a choice over whether your project team is full or part-time. There are advantages and disadvantages to both scenario, and it is therefore important that you assess your particular situation in order to maximise the benefits and minimise the drawbacks. And so we reach the implementation stage. During this stage, time management, both yours and others, is going to be very important. Here are a few time management hints and tips to help you. Priorities. It is extremely important to establish priorities, as we will rarely be in the luxurious position of having plenty of time to do everything. Even if we were, a lack of priority would not enable us to schedule our work or give the right amount of time to each task. On the whole, priorities are established on the basis of urgency, importance, time available, resources available, and standard required. Deadlines. Always allocate a completion time or date to each task. This is particularly important when either receiving work or delegating it to others. Urgent, top priority, and ASAP can mean very different things to different people. Action lists. Simple action lists for each day's work are a helpful way of staying on track. They should be prioritised and reviewed regularly. Any tasks added throughout the day should be prioritised on the basis of those already on the list. Plan ahead. Try to plan your work in terms of short, mid, and long-term action. Get into the habit of looking ahead and block out time in advance for future tasks, rather than wait until they are upon you when you may find it hard to make the necessary time available. Self-discipline. Most of us do the easy or nice jobs first. We should try to avoid this and focus more on the urgency or the importance of the task. Challenge your own rationale to make sure that you are allocating your time in the most effective way. Delegate. We have all suffered at some point from the "I can do it quicker myself" syndrome. Maybe it is true, but think about whether it is the best use of your time. Many people cause their own time management problems by becoming a bottleneck and holding on to tasks that could more effectively be delegated to someone else. Delegation is also an excellent way to develop skills in others. Are you a morning person? We all have a time of the day when we work best and worst. Think about when your best time is and try to schedule your most demanding tasks during your own most productive or energetic period. One at a time. Question: how do you eat an elephant? Answer: one piece at a time. Break bigger or more complicated jobs down into smaller, more digestible pieces. Have a Kit Kat. Research generally shows that our optimum concentration span is limited to just approximately 20 minutes at a time. And we really do start to become less effective after 90 minutes. Building brief but regular breaks into your schedule will lead to greater concentration and productivity. Filing. Get your papers and files into some sort of order. This could be numerically, alphabetically, or by groupings and categories, etc. Use some self-discipline to ensure that you file your work on a regular basis. Set standards. As well as setting time deadlines, set performance standards too, so that you know exactly how much effort is required to complete the task in a satisfactory manner. Batch it up. Some tasks could be batched in order to save time, for example, calls, filing, emailing, printing, etc. Get it right first time. Setting standards will help with this. However, checking your work regularly will also help to ensure that it is meeting the requirement. This will avoid rework later to correct mistakes. Do it now. Try to avoid procrastination and aim to handle each piece of work only twice, once to prioritise it and once to action it. At the beginning, I spoke about the need for a good system to monitor and control your project. So let us now take a closer look at how you might create that system. It is very important to establish a mechanism that supports the effective implementation of your project plan. A system that closely monitors and controls your project will probably both involve what are called hard and soft techniques. Here are some characteristics that a good system might have. Clear goals and objectives. Effective status reporting. Good communication channels. Regular review and regular feedback. Flexibility and contingency. accuracy, consistency and timeliness, openness and honesty, regular risk analysis, measuring what is important and not making important what is measurable, clear reporting lines and clear roles and responsibilities, analysis of estimates versus actuals, costs and times, for example, effective change control, good relationships with team, client, sponsor and stakeholders, up-to-date project plans and records, interaction and sharing between project participants, understanding of statutory or regulatory requirements, regular review of resource allocation, regular review of stakeholders, and the use of the cost, time, quality triangle for decision making. Another critical feature of you staying in control of your project is the extent to which you can positively influence the other people involved. Project managers need to influence many people during the project life cycle. It is important to think about the most appropriate way to influence in each case. This means giving consideration to the situation and the person you are trying to influence, rather than always relying on your most comfortable style or approach. A good influencer will be flexible in their approach. The following list shows some of the qualities that we generally like to be displayed by people we deal with. Good active listening skills. Good sense of humour. Strong sense of commitment and values. Approachable and flexible. Assertive and forthright. Showing care and consideration for others. Fair and objective. Friendly and polite. Clear and articulate. Well prepared and organised. Open and honest. Well informed and showing confidence. Positive and enthusiastic. Which of these skills do you have the opportunity to improve upon so that you can enhance your ability to influence others? Projects usually involve a variety of meetings and can be a great means of keeping up to date and staying in control. Effective meeting skills cover a wide range of behaviours and techniques. And here follows a checklist which summarises some of the key areas to consider. Clearly define and communicate the objective of the meeting and its expected outputs. Think about how to structure the meeting, both in terms of timings and the processes used, in order to achieve the required outcome. Summarise the structure by issuing an agenda in advance of the meeting so that people have time to prepare. Clearly communicate what each person is expected to bring to the meeting. For example, an open mind, an update report, commitment, etc., etc. Think carefully about who should be at the meeting. Avoid inviting people unnecessarily and ensure that those attending have the appropriate level of knowledge and authority for the subject matter. Don't waste your or other people's time. Think through what needs to be achieved and make a careful assessment of the time, information and materials required. Ensure that the practicalities have been addressed, for example the location, refreshments, equipment, etc. Facilitate the event, encouraging participation from everyone and ensuring the meeting maintains its focus and structure. Summarise and capture key action points and any other issues raised that perhaps need to be addressed separately. Produce minutes to summarise the key actions and points raised. Think also about who should receive copies of the minutes. Follow up. The meeting is ultimately successful only if the outcomes are implemented. Use your monitoring and controlling system to ensure delivery. Finally, for the implementation stage, let us take a quick look at team working. The project manager needs to build an effective team, often very quickly and using people who do not usually work together or even know each other. It is important, therefore, to establish some team activities as early on as possible in order to promote the establishment of good working relationships. This can be achieved by getting the team to help you create the work breakdown structure or undertake the risk assessment exercise, etc. Remember that being project manager should not mean you doing all the work. Sharing the activities in the project life cycle is a good team building exercise and is also a good way to ensure maximum input and expertise is applied. There have been many studies to try and establish the recipe for success as far as teams are concerned, and the following list summarises the key principles identified by most research on this subject. Clearly stated goals and objectives. Openness and assertiveness. Regular review. Support and trust. Clear procedures. Standards and performance expectations. Personal development opportunities. Social skills and activities. Reward and recognition. Centered and consistent leadership. Having successfully implemented the project, we now need to hand over or close down and complete the project. Properly completing your project or task is a very critical activity in the project and workload life cycle, and is unfortunately one which often receives inadequate planning and attention. The ultimate success of the whole job can hinge on how well this is conducted, therefore it warrants some careful thought. Effective handover will be one with clearly defined and committed ownership of the end product once it becomes part of business as usual. The exact timescales and deliverables will have been agreed. The project will have been clearly communicated to all relevant parties prior to the event. The recipients of the end result will have been involved throughout the project implementation and will have probably helped to develop the final solution. The recipients will have received adequate training and documentation or procedures associated with the project's deliverables. Relevant processes and procedures, etc., will have been thoroughly checked and tested as part of the handover exercise and any final actions completed. Any ongoing support required will have been defined and resourced. The handover will include a set of clear, accurate, and complete project records or templates that might also contain useful additional information or recommendations for future enhancement activities, etc. All of the above points will have been addressed within a project handover or close down plan that will have been instigated at the very beginning and developed further as the project progressed. The final stage is to review the project and your efforts to make it a success. Project and workload review can be approached in a number of different ways. In addition to reviewing what has been achieved, it is also important to look at how it was achieved. So what did we achieve? Reviewing what has been achieved may be a key part of the handover or completion process and may be needed in order to secure the final sign-off to the project's deliverables. The foundation for this review lies within the original project objectives, which were measurable, and other key project criteria provide the parameters for a comprehensive assessment. How did we achieve it? Unfortunately, this aspect to review is often ignored. However, it can give rise to invaluable learning which could be transferred to future initiatives and so promote continuous improvement and personal development. This type of review tends to focus more on some of the softer or peripheral aspects of the project effort and would encompass things like how well a team performed together and what people did that either helped or hindered progress, for example. Both types of review can be approached in a variety of different ways, ranging from group workshops, surveys, or interviews, etc., to simply reflecting upon your own personal efforts. It may be most useful to apply a combination of approaches in order to ensure that feedback is obtained from a variety of sources in a meaningful way. Whichever approach is used, it may be helpful to structure your review by considering some of the following questions. What am I reviewing? Why am I reviewing it? Who is the review for? When shall I conduct the review? Where shall I conduct the review? And how am I going to conduct the review? Here are some random examples of review points that could be incorporated into your approach. Were the objectives clearly defined and understood? Did we meet our objectives? How did we manage our time? Did any conflict arise? If so, how did we manage it? How accurate were our estimates, time and cost, for example? What behaviours helped us? What behaviours hindered us? What did I do as project manager that helped move things forward? What would I do differently next time? What did the sponsor or the client or the team do that helped or hindered the project? What went well or less well? How would I or the other parties score the project out of 10? Did we communicate effectively? Did everyone have clearly defined roles and responsibilities? Did we achieve the required levels of quality or performance? Did I have the right amount of authority or empowerment to fulfill my role? Did everyone have the right skills to perform their role? Is the customer satisfied? What have been the key learning points from the project? How have I developed personally during the project? What areas of my personal development do I want to work on now? Was there resistance to the project? Why was that? And what did we do about it? Were the project records accurate, complete, and up to date? Does everyone feel rewarded or recognised for their contribution? And was there an atmosphere of honesty and openness? And so the list could go on and on. Plan your review carefully in order to establish which aspects to explore so that you gain most benefit from the exercise. Remember, review is not a one-off exercise. It should form part of your regular project management activities and be built into your project plan so that you can monitor and control more effectively. This concludes the podcast on work and project planning. I do hope you found this useful, and thank you very much for listening.